Author of The Crooked Tree, Una Mannion, has just published a new novel. It's called Tell Me What I Am. It's a fictional story of Dina Garvey, who disappeared in 2004 in Philadelphia, leaving behind a daughter and a sister. Dina's daughter, Ruby, moves to Vermont, where she learns how to hunt, when to seed the garden, how to avoid, and all of that to avoid making her father, Lucas, angry. Most importantly, never should she ask a question about her absent mother, Dina. Dina's sister, Nessa, an artist, stays stuck in Philadelphia, getting more and more desperate. She knows the man responsible for her sister's disappearance. She can't prove it. Over 14 years, 400 miles apart, these two women, Ruby and Nessa, slowly begin to unearth the secrets and lies at the heart of their family. This is the bones of this gripping story. I'm delighted to have author Una Mannion with me in studio this evening. And you had a great moment, actually, I think, just before you come in the door, Una. Tell us about what's in front. There are two versions of the book sitting in front of you right now.
Yeah, just as I came in, Kay Hand was holding
the producer was holding
a copy, the hardback copy of the Faber edition, which I haven't seen yet. It's my first time to see it, hold it, which is great. I think the cover looks really good.
Yeah, because I had been using a PDF copy, as we often do in these situations. I must say, when I saw the cover, I thought, wow, that really brings the book to life. It's a big moment, I'm guessing, for an author to see the reality of the book, which is something you've labored over for probably a number of years.
Yeah, I think for me, first of all, I've been working on the book for about probably three years. Mm. And it's a journey. I think like tomorrow is the launch, and holding the physical copy is pretty amazing. Yeah.
Because you have the American version with you, the paperback version of the American, but seeing the hardback and the favorite version obviously was a big thing. Okay, let's get to the heart of this story, which is a woman who has disappeared, and subsequent to that, the man with whom she was involved moves with their daughter, and that leaves the other family members distraught. That's the nub of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the book opens with the disappearance of Dina Garvey. She's a mother. She's a NICU nurse, so she takes care of neonatal infants. She has a history of mental health issues, and she's estranged from her former partner. And they share custody of the child. Well, she has primary custody, and he gets her every other weekend. Mm. And she heads off to work. She lives with her sister, and she never arrives. And what happens is the father is automatically granted full custody, and he moves with her to Vermont, 400 miles away, and refuses the family visitation rights, third-party visitation rights, which he's legally entitled to, because the law says children might, you know, that she has abandonment issues. You know, his argument is the mother disappeared, the mother left them. The mother abandoned the child. So he cuts off the mother's family completely.
What was the starting point for this story? Because coercive control and a very difficult man, that's really at the nub of the matter here as well. What was the starting point for you?
For me, I was really interested in the idea of the person who disappears. I think it's even just listening to your previous guest talk about that idea of disappearing someone or redacting someone or trying to erase somebody. And I think there's a kind of violence in forgetting. I always remember Milan Kundera's that line about the struggle against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting. That, you know, that the cruelest thing is not just to have done physical violence to someone, but to take away the children's memory of their mother. So I think I was really interested in that idea of like the story that never ends is the story of the missing person. But you know, there's an epidemic of missing women in America and other places, and particularly of indigenous and Black women. And this is not that story. Mm. And I'm really conscious of that. I didn't really want to focus. I wanted to really think about memory and the importance of that. But for me, all the material that I've read is that missing women are often domestic. The majority there's a history of domestic violence. And so I was kind of interested in what happens. And even to this family that loves their sister and supports her, what happens where someone comes into your world and starts to manipulate.
Yeah, manipulate the situation. So in this particular case, the person whose memory, I guess, is being manipulated or erased, or where sections of her life are being redacted, is the young girl.
Yeah.
It's Ruby, the daughter, who goes off to Vermont with her father, with the character of Lucas, who kind of a peculiar chap in many ways. In he wants to live sustainably. He wants to hunt his own food. He wants to plant his own seeds. He wants to do all of it, which on the surface of things makes him sound like a grand old chap.
I think this is part of men like Lucas, is that there's a charisma and there's something often quite interesting about them or rogue about them, and this real kind of independent living, and his, you know, he's an outdoorsman and he's cynical and iconoclastic, and you know, he's a dissenter, and there's, you know, that can be quite compelling.
Yeah, he has a charisma about
him. He sort of knows his own mind, and so from the moment Dina, who's quite vulnerable, meets him, like automatically he sees the vulnerability, and she loves that person who knows
everything,
who knows what they know. And
I want you to read a section, and this is with Lucas, who is the father character, and his daughter Ruby. What age is she at this point when they go out turkey hunting?
She's young, so she might be, I think she's probably about 12. But I mean, that's not uncommon, just to say, in the States, for young children to be out with powerful guns.
Yeah.
Just to say.
Let's listen.
Okay, just to preface it a little bit, the kind of hunting that they're doing is in late October, early November. So before they hunt, they actually find a flock and they charge the flock to separate the hen from the rest of the flock. Ruby sat at the base of a beech, almost exactly where they scattered the flock. Lucas was just a few yards away. They settled themselves, masks and gloves on, fully camouflaged, guns ready. Lucas nodded and she picked up the box call and ran it, moving the paddle across the wooden container. The hen yelp echoed in the quiet woods. It was the part of hunting that made her slightly sad. How they separated the hens and their young, and then drew them back by the mother's call. They waited. Patience was crucial. You had to be willing to sit for hours. She used the box call again. Nothing. She leaned back against the tree. Then she heard it. A raspy yelp. A hen calling. She replied on the box. Waited. The hen's throaty yelp again. She called back. Not too much. Lucas had taught her, don't overdo it. Then the sounds were close. A shot of adrenaline went through her. She steadied the shotgun on her knee, leaned in, watched the bead, listened. There were three rules of turkey hunting. Don't move and don't move and don't move. Turkeys were smart, could see even an eye blink. She sensed them before she saw them, first one, then two jakes, maybe 40 yards away. She held her breath, dared not move. 30 yards, watched the bead, waited 20 yards. The bead and the head were indistinguishable. She squeezed, felt the kick from the 20 gauge in her chest as the turkey started and slumped. A hit. They waited a moment while the other Jake fled. Lucas called over to her and they stood, bagged the animal and carried its warm, limp body back to the truck.
Now, Una Mannion reading from her book, Tell Me What I Am. I was talking about the tension in the FBI interrogation earlier on. There's real tension in that scene. You know, I suppose that is the nature of the quietness that would be needed for a hunt. This is a thriller. So to what extent are you kind of keeping the energy going? Because we have to find out what happened to this woman. Why did she disappear? All of those things. We don't need to go into the ins and outs of that. But you need that aspect. But you're also dealing with some very serious topics here. What was that balance for you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would see it as literary fiction, but I know it'll be positioned as literary crime, and because it does have a crime element in there, sort of thriller kind of pacing.
Yes,
as,
yeah.
You know, Ruby is beginning to discover things about her father and about her past. I was really influenced by The Tempest. So that Tell Me What I Am is a phrase that Miranda in The Tempest says to her father, Prospero. And Prospero has, you know, from when she was three, they've been out on this island, you know, this, we don't know where it was, whether it was in the New World or, you know, somewhere, you know, in off Europe. But he controls her narrative. And I was really interested in that idea that someone's totally in charge of somebody else's history and their story. And so there's this, you know, he's isolated her. But what's happening is that there's little threads coming through. Mm. She has vague memories. And I'm interested in that idea of like, how can memory be held in other ways by other people, by community, what you can't erase, even how the body holds it. But she receives a package at school when she's in sixth grade. So she's about, I don't know, 11.
Yeah.
And it completely rewrites her reality because she knows there's things that she doesn't know. And she knows categorically that she's being lied to. Yeah. And so it, what happens is she's sort of questing, I think. And all the time, what she doesn't know is that somebody else is questing.
Her aunt is trying to find her as well. The aunt is based in Philadelphia, which is where you were born and grew up, but you're now based in Sligo.
Yeah.
Just before we talk about the move to Sligo, how important was it for you to have Philadelphia represented? Was it just to have something to root? I know that place and I can write about it till the cows come home.
I guess because it's in my mind, I draw on Philadelphia all the time, or I can walk streets.
You don't have to go and do the research.
but I also had the opportunity to research. So I spent 3 days with the homicide detective, a former homicide detective. I got to go to the criminal court. I was in the Roundhouse, the very famous Roundhouse, which is like a building in Philadelphia. It's like basically the police HQ, and it's allegedly shaped like handcuffs, you know, but really bizarre place. Like they've nothing digitized, like files from the floor to the ceiling. But it was really amazing to spend this time with the homicide detective in a place like Philadelphia. And some of my nieces were like, oh, you know, now you're all about the men in blue or the boys in blue and you've turned, you know. But it was really such an eye-opener to see that experience. And I mean, I haven't written a procedural, but it was important to kind of know
what
happens.
And when I say it's a thriller, there are certainly thriller aspects to the way the story is told in terms of how it unfolds in front of us. When did the move to Sligo come and why?
Yeah, so I've been in Sligo since 19... I've been coming to Sligo all my life. My father's from Strandhill in County Sligo, so I came as a child. And then in the late 80s, I met my husband. He's a traditional musician from Sligo and plays with Dervish, the band. And stayed, and I've been here since.
Yeah, great tunes, obviously kept you as well as everything else. You got to listen to Dervish at home.
Yeah,
that was quite handy. But there is certainly something about, and I know that you teach creative writing as well, and in and around the Sligo region, there's something about what's a kind of an artistic movement. I know it has all of that magical landscape around it, but what's going on there? I mean, I think it was Louise Kennedy was the one who told us that it was you who said to her, go to a writer's workshop.
I have to confess, it was actually Niamh McCabe, our friend Niamh McCabe, who brought her to the workshop, and myself and Rose Jordan, who's Kathy Jordan, the singer, Jordan's sister. Rose and I had started the writing group. And on the first night, you know, about 10 of us showed up and Louise was one of them. And she wrote this amazing story. But I think for all of us, I mean, Louise was already a voracious reader for years, and I've known her for a long time. But there's a whole environment in Sligo that maybe even began, I mean, I don't know about Yeats or, but there's obviously there's this legacy and this respect. But like Dermot Healy was there and doing Force 10. Lillian Bardwell was there. Brian Layden is there. Owen McNamee, Kevin Barry. Molly McCluskey was there. Tess Gallagher spent summers there. You know, I could go. But then there's this new crop of writers. I mean, Sheila Armstrong is from Sligo, and her book has just came out last week. And
yeah, we were speaking about it actually on the program. Yeah,
brilliant writer. And so there is. It's a really supportive and I guess a great place to work and be disciplined because you don't have the distractions of a city. there does feel like, to me personally, I feel like I'm very supported by a community. And on the writing course, which is at Atlantic Technological University, it's like the new ATU Sligo. Because we have a writing course, we have writers like Elska Rahul and Alice Lyons, Jared Byrne, there's Keith Hopper, there's all these people positioned there. So I guess there's a kind of community there as well, and a really great library.
And you say you're drawn back to Philadelphia, and indeed in the novel Tell Me What I Am, there is a chunk in Philadelphia and there's a chunk in the more rural aspect, I suppose, of Vermont, because we get the hunt and we get various other rural aspects in that side of the story. What about the magical landscape of Sligo? Does that seep into the writing, or has that been seeping into the writing in any way?
I don't think I would have ever written if I didn't live in Sligo. Mm. Like, I guess that's, I'm just being real about that. And part of that, I think, is just because there's so many people around you writing and there's a respect for writing. But definitely, I think there's something about the landscape for me personally that that's evokes something. Mm. Or that you're reaching for something that you can't name, a kind of wonder or mystery, or, you know, and maybe that's what writing or art or whatever is, that sense of, yeah, mystery. And so, yeah, like in this book and the previous book, Ireland creeps in because my experience is being Irish American.
There is an Irish American aspect to the story as well in Tell Me What I Am.
Yeah. My father never became an American citizen. He really was one of those people that never, you know, he divorced after being married for just 10 years and had 8 kids. It was very uncommon, you know, in America at the time. And he had this yearning for here. And I think I probably...
You lived that for him.
I did. And I said I would never live that kind of hyphenated existence. And here I am.
Like, living it.
Yeah. So.
Well, listen, congratulations on the book, and lovely to see you here this evening. I mentioned Louise Kennedy. We're going to play a little bit of Louise Kennedy actually shortly about a new piece that she's done for us here on RTE Radio 1. So I'll tell you about that in a while. But first of all, let me thank Aoife Mannion and remind people that Aoife's book, Tell Me What I Am, is published by Faber and Faber. It will be launched tomorrow evening at Hodges Figgis in Dublin. You'll be there yourself, I'm presuming.
I will be.
Una, for the launch. That's Aoife Mannion.